This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Battle-hardened, time-weathered man speaks from the end of a long black table. An image burns against the side of a smooth white wall. The projector is frozen on a slide of what seems to be some sort of chart and an electron magnification of what could be living cells, though something about them seems unnatural.
Explain to me, if you can, how you obtained this information.
From the opposite end of the table, the two men in black dress attire wait patiently. They had been presenting their information to these men, expecting to answer the questions that would follow. Now, it was time to begin. The man on the left leaned forward slowly, his face touching the light from the slides. It was James Welch.
As I said when we first spoke, General, I am not at liberty to deviate from my instructions. I am only prepared to answer questions related to the presentation itself.
Paul Emery lit a cigarette beside James and waited. One of the other men, his face shrouded in darkness, spoke up. His voice was firm and sharp, as though used to giving orders, not asking questions. And yet he spoke.
"What exactly do you want, Mr. Welch?"
James paused, as though thinking. He turned to the third member of his party, a tall and thin man, who until now had remained away from the conversation. Welch looked to him for a moment. The figure remained silent, still, and simply nodded. Turning back towards the table, James could not help but smile.
"We simply want to level the playing field."
The general at the end of the table arched an eyebrow and leaned forward as a glare of determination overtook his face.
"Do you understand what you're asking us to do? We're meeting here because, by even talking to you, the entire program is not only under a microscope, it's in jeopardy. If he ever gets wind of this,"
Emery interrupted.
"He won't. We've taken measures to ensure that no one outside of this room knows about any of this. No one except our employer."
The general began to lean back slowly, then turned his eyes to another of the shadowy figures at the table. An aged man in a dark blue jacket turned towards the visitors and lit a cigarette of his own. He began to speak in a slow voice, dull, almost tranquil.
"Mr. Carmichael should know better than to get involved in government matters."
Welch nodded.
"And you should know where your bread is buttered, Admiral."
The Admiral gave this a moment, as he took a heavy drag on his tobacco.
I see. So, we're all old friends then. Bravo.
The old man gave an intrigued glance to the man standing behind Welch and Emery, but did not linger in doing so. The quiet figure was still, motionless, unnerving. The general spoke up.
What you are suggesting, should we even acknowledge that any of this is true, is that we violate every oath that we have ever given to our country. You're asking us to commit treason.
Paul Emery addressed this with a heavy exhale.
Don't be so dramatic. Besides, it is true. Otherwise, you would never have allowed us in here. And you are going to comply. Otherwise, why not just kill us? None of this is necessary. This is only a matter of numbers, am I right?
A younger man in a dark green uniform replied to this.
Everything's about numbers.
Welch nodded confidently.
Indeed.
The general seemed to consider this, and then addressed James with a new attitude of resolve.
You realize, of course, that the weapon is useless without a way for the host to survive. Our team has never been able to stop the cellular degeneration that the wave causes.
A sly grin ebbed at the corners of Welch's mouth as he listened to this. He gave this possibility a moment and a nod. Without being prompted, the third man began to move. He took a step from the wall and into the light. He was a young but intense man, a man whose research was about to change everything, but also a man that had befriended someone even more brilliant.
What if I told you that Ethan Dorian has already solved that riddle?
The admiral quipped, unconvinced by the younger man's claim. Who the hell are you, son?
Welch replied instead.
He's someone that knows quite a bit. He's the reason that we know about the Meritus Initiative. He's also the reason for Dorian's breakthrough.
The military leaders glanced to one another, clearly surprised by this development. General Doremus raised a hand to them, calming them as he responded to the new information.
Hold on. Just hold on. So you can tell us then about the second part.
Emery's eyes widened. James smiled broadly. Welch hesitated and then answered coldly.
Oh, I see. So you do know what he's been up to, or at least that he was up to something. Good. That should make it easier for us to explain the details of it.
The room fell silent for several seconds as each man contemplated all that was now on the table here. Welch reached into a pocket, removed a piece of white paper, and pushed it to the center of the table. One of the soldiers took it and passed it down to the general. He looked to the three strangers, then the note, and back again. After a delayed hesitation, he nodded.
Excellent,
Welch muttered, and then turned to the young man that was standing behind him. The young man was more than ready to speak. He had been waiting for this chance for far too long. Enthusiasm had been subdued for years, replaced by frustration, supplanted by failure. This would be his chance for redemption.
Thank you, General. Let me introduce myself. My name is Charles Hine.
I am a research scientist, a physician, and a close friend to Jason Rodriguez. Hearing this, the Admiral asked with a careful draw,
"How do you know Rodriguez?"
Dr. Hine grinned.
"How? Well, I was the one that brought him to Ethan Dorian."
Jason sat quietly, staring into a large computer monitor, silently analyzing everything he had become and everything he had lost. She was gone now, taken by the monster inside of her, the thing he had tried so desperately to tame or kill. She was gone. Charles opened the door to the operating room and stepped in slowly. Jason heard him but did not react. Rodriguez only looked to the images displayed on the screen in front of him, pictures of magnified cells, detailed breakdowns of their biochemical reactions and processes. He searched them for some clue to his failures, some understanding of how he had given away every effort to save his mother to the darkness of her grave. Dr. Hine stepped to his friend's side and gently placed a hand on Jason's shoulder. Rodriguez reacted to this with a subtle turn and a word whispered. "Hey." Hine analyzed the screen carefully, then gave his full attention to the other doctor.
"She would want you to go on."
A tear welled up in Jason's eye, but did not fall. He would not allow it.
"I know,"
he muttered, an emptiness in the sound of it. Charles squeezed Jason's shoulder and then lifted his hand away. He turned from the bereaved man and took a few steps to the far end of the room. There was a white light shining down from the ceiling here, illuminating a bright white sheet draped over a gurney and the body of a woman. Hind looked to the outline of her face beneath the sheet and began to ponder deeply on the events that had led them to this moment. They were so close to breaking the genetic code, so very close to an understanding of a fundamental truth at the heart of life's very essence, and yet there had not been enough time. He hoped that this terrible failure would not undo all of their efforts or force Rodriguez beyond the point of reason.
"Thank you,"
Jason said beneath his breath. Charles turned, surprised, and hesitated to say anything in return. After a few seconds, Rodriguez continued,
"I never would have even had a chance if it wasn't for you, Charlie. You know?"
Charles thought about that and then offered a delayed reply.
"Jason, you know it wasn't me. I just introduced you, that's all. We both owe everything to him."
The clinging tear finally dropped as Jason met his friend's eyes.
"We have to finish this."
Charles smiled warmly.
"We will."
Giving a final glance to the body beside him, the young doctor then added,
"For her."
Colt ran forward, bolting towards the cloud of dust. A struggling helicopter tried to hover above, but its engines were failing. Their cries of protest shrieked and groaned as the rotors fought to offer lift. After a few moments, the aircraft roared away in the direction of the nearby town, descending to the ground against its will. The dog rushed forward, passing through a haze of dust. He could see something on the ground ahead through the distortion of the thick air, There was a dark shape at the center of the clearing in the brush. The bodies of two men, their shapes tangled in a twisted embrace. A dark and growing pool of blood was splintering into a web of crimson across the hard surface of the Texas soil. The dog could smell the scent of their blood, felt an undeniable need to reach these men, but his colt was almost upon them. He suddenly stopped a few feet away. Perry ran towards the dust cloud, close behind his dog, carried by his new strength, and saw the reason for Colt's alarm. Through the dull distortion of the haze, he too saw the bodies. But there was something else. Whatever light was absent in the shadow had been replaced by an even greater power. Blue light flickered and flashed, and Jason's body heaved and shuddered. At his side, Paul Emery lay, broken and done. The sight of him was staggering. Jason Rodriguez lay in an unnatural pose. The bones of his limbs had clearly been shattered. His face was distorted from the loss of structure in his skull. He should be dead, as dead as the man beside him. But he was no man. Jason opened his eyes.
"Oh, my God,"
Perry heard himself mutter in shock. Rodriguez tried to speak, but could not. The agony of his injuries was greater than can be described, and so he fell into unconsciousness as his body continued to throb and turn, sizzling from the power of some bizarre electricity, moving inch by inch within, methodically arranging itself back into a man. Charles held the syringe in his hands, shaking with anticipation and dread as he stared into the eyes of the man that was his friend. Jason was afraid. They shared the same fear together in this moment, for if this failed, then all would be lost. The process could not be repeated. There was no time. Jason gave one last glance to the body on the table and the computer screen on the wall. Everything he had done, every achievement, every breakthrough, all of the work and sacrifice that had been done and given, everything that defined him, had led him to this very instant. The stakes could not be higher. In this moment, he would either succeed or be destroyed.
"I'm ready."
Charles Hine inserted the needle into the base of Jason's brainstem, pushed the undulating fluid inside, then quickly withdrew the empty tube and stepped away. The reaction had been expected, and yet it was even more horrifying than imagination could have allowed. Jason began to shake violently, screaming and jerking as his body dropped to the floor. Dr. Hine watched from a safe distance. Their previous experiments had taught him enough to understand the danger of entering into close proximity. Rodriguez writhed in unspeakable pain as his body caught fire inside of him. A blue light began to burn through him, firing from his neck down into his body and up into his head. Shrill cries of high-voltage electricity accompanied discharges of energy that resembled the sheets of lightning that pass from cloud to cloud in a storm that divides two seasons. His change would not come easily, or, as the two men discovered this day, quickly. But it did come. This was the first transformation, and the first success of Project Meritus. Official memo. Subject: Project Meritus. Monday, March 16th. Greetings, General DeRamus. As the primary analyst for all scientific operations in our interagency program, I have been directed to instruct you to make available all of your development assets regarding Project Meritus. It has come to our attention that there has been an ongoing field exercise related to this. Because of the highly sensitive nature of these materials and their security requirements, we are mandated to oversee all operational R&D, including any ongoing efforts that were initiated prior to our new regulations. Compliance with these requirements demands that we assume control and possession of all such project initiatives. Our concern in this matter is of the highest degree. You are requested to make all materials available during a briefing tomorrow morning at 0800. Please be present at your office so that we may proceed without unnecessary delay. Thank you. Lionel J. Ramirez, National Security Agency. Tuesday, March 17th. General DeRamus sat at a large oak desk, patiently listening to the words of a young, sympathetic-looking man that he did not trust. Lionel Ramirez was accompanied by two others in dark black suits, but his companions gave no hint of the charisma of their principal. These were large, brooding figures with heavy scowls and sinister eyes. Over the years, the general had become accustomed to dealing with NSA operatives like these. Some of them had been recruited from his own ranks, so he was fully aware of their purpose here and what the implication of their presence was. He was careful not to look at them for too long or in any direct way, instead giving his attention and ire to the man they had been assigned to. "Mr. Ramirez, we have many operations taking place at any given moment. My duties require the supervision of all of them. But I can assure you that any initiatives that have been taken in the matter of concern would have been brought to my attention directly. I can make inquiries into the actions of our field officers, but what you are asking will take some time. National security is the highest priority here. And regardless of what you believe your job to be, we have the same protocols to follow as well. I'm sure you understand." Ramirez leaned back in his chair, then motioned with a hand towards the two figures behind him. Speaking with a clarifying seriousness, he ordered them to leave the office. "Wait outside. I'll be along in a moment." The two glanced to the general with disdain, then complied. They slowly shuffled to the office door, opened it, and proceeded to the hallway. As the door shut, Lionel turned his attention back to DeRamus with a renewed politeness. "General, it is not my intent to make this any more difficult than it has to be. I know that you have served our country with the highest dignity and diligence. That is not in question here. And it doesn't have to be." DeRamus lifted an eyebrow at this. "Excuse me?" Undeterred by the general's contrived surprise, Ramirez continued, but as he spoke, the warmth seemed to fade from his words. "We are well aware of the Meritus Initiative. Well aware. I know that you have been personally involved in the weapons research development of your PsyOps program. I also know that you have been dealing with certain parties regarding the funding and testing of some of your, well, less than legal agendas." An uncomfortable silence took the room for several seconds, confirming these accusations enough for the young man to proceed. "We have the same goals. And I don't care about what kind of deal you've made with him. In fact, you should be aware by now that because of the nature of certain parties in high places, that you will require an outside hand to retrieve what you have shared with him. The soldier considered this, then nodded.
You NSA guys are motherfuckers. You know that, don't you? You probably get some kind of sick pleasure in fucking over the military. I never wanted to involve any private sector development teams in this. But little squirrely shits like you forced my hand. Human rights this and torture that. Two-faced fucks every second throwing the damn Geneva Convention in our faces while screaming to the media about defense funding. What the hell did you expect me to do?
Agent Ramirez shook his head. I'm not here to debate politics. I'm here to get my weapon. You will give it to me, or I'll destroy you and everything you've worked for. You've got a wife, 3 kids, been in the service for almost 40 years. That's a lot to think about. You can either give me some answers today or talk with the Senate when you're indicted. Do you understand me? The elder man paused, a silent rage in his eyes, uniform neatly pressed and kept, an array of ribbons sewn across his chest, the picture of a beautiful woman with 3 children posed against an autumn field resting on his desk, gave careful thought to the fullness of his actions and the words of this intruder. General DeRamus opened the front drawer of his desk, reached inside, and withdrew a silver pistol. He lifted the muzzle of his gun to his own chin and fired. As Ramirez jumped back from his seat, the door flew open. The 2 agents had already drawn their guns, expecting something else entirely as they entered. Lionel stared in shock for a moment, unprepared for this insanity. Get out of here! Get the MPs to seal this area off now! Each of them ran from the room in different directions, leaving Lionel with the dying man. He watched the general fade as his body convulsed, blood oozing from a gaping wound that stretched from his neck to the top of his face, until at last all life had left him. Disgust written over his features, Ramirez picked up his phone and dialed a familiar number. I'm at the general's office right now. He just blew his brains out right in front of me. Yeah, you heard me. He's dead. He's fucking dead. A calm and collected voice answered this on the other side. James Welch replied, Calm down, Lionel. Just calm down. Who knows about this? Just the 3 of us. I sent for the MPs. Welch continued, Okay, that's good. We can still manage the situation. This complicates our plan, though. I need to call the old man. Wait for my call before you leave. Lionel replied, growing more agitated. Understood. The call ended. James Welch lowered his cell phone and turned his eyes to the imposing figure at his side. A man in a dark black uniform was carefully sharpening a large combat knife. He raised his eyes from his work and shook his head. With a thick British accent, John addressed his compatriot.
I knew you'd fuck this up. We're both dead men.
A wave of dread swept over James. As the soldier spoke these words, he knew the consequences of failure, and the truth in John's words, he could not let this happen.
No, we can do this. We can still do this. But I think the second option may be the only way.
John smiled.
About fucking time.
Welch met the cold eyes staring back and asked sharply, "How much time do you need to assemble your equipment and team?" The soldier turned suddenly away and hurled his knife. It glided across the hotel room, embedding itself into a thick wooden beam.
5 days. Another 2 for the trip.
Welch nodded.
I can have the techs online by then, and he should be on his way back from Montana. If we time this right, he'll never know what hit him.
John could not have looked more pleased. He began to sing with a confident and enthusiastic grin written over every inch of his face.
The stars at night are big and bright.
John pulled himself across the gray gravel, over brass casings and thickening blood, away from the remains of Dorian's lair. The magnitude of his pain was astounding, but this was a fierce and hardened warrior. He pushed as much of his suffering away as he could and pulled his body to the edge of a broken fountain. He was so thirsty, so thirsty. As the soldier reached the edge of the concrete circle, he lifted himself up onto its edge, biting at his own teeth as his heart pulsed through the injured leg with vicious malice. At last, he had reached the water. John took a moment to drink as much as he could, calming himself as he did, then looked beyond the statue at the center of it to the 2 men waiting nearby. Somehow, he had not noticed them until now.
"Well, hello again,"
Derek whispered as he stepped in John's direction.
"Stay the fuck away from me,"
the injured warrior muttered, but he could only rest and wait as he fell into the hands of eager enemies. This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 39, The Meritus Initiative. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.